Golbash, music manager.
Yes, sir.
I like the choice of the song today. You know, Golbash?
It's a very meaningful song based on life.
Well, especially when we have days in the past 2 weeks that have been like freezing and like 30 degrees. And yes, and 2 days ago I showed up in the newsroom and I was wearing two hoodies and a jacket. And they were like, "What are you doing? It's going to be 50 degrees today." And I said, "The sun is out?" I said, "That still exists?
The sun is real still?"
I've gotten used to so many clouds and dreary weather and
miserable
basketball players transferring. Everything is just miserable.
Yeah, all basketball players all around the state of Pennsylvania seem to be transferring.
Yeah, so we can start it right there. Before we go into anything pro, let's go into some college first. Austin Bechtel, Nate Breisinger, Andrew Golbash, Baldwin in the Berg, February 26th, 2021, here with you on RMU Radio. First off, let's start with Pitt basketball. Oh, boy.
Oh, boy, Pitt
basketball. Oh, boy, Pitt basketball. What a mess on your hands. So, Xavier Johnson and Audis Tony, in the span of about 24 hours, maybe a little bit less, give or take, decide that they are going to mutually agree to part ways with the program. Some interesting developments have come out. A bunch of rumors, speculation, some lot of speculation that part of it had to do with someone connected to Justin Champagne. You can find out more research if you can look it up if you want.
If you really care that much, you can look deep into it.
We don't know how far we're allowed to go on these airwaves to be able to truly describe it to you, but I'm sure the deep, wide world of the internet will be able to do it justice.
It'll tell you everything you need to know.
But this, and after John Hughley, Nate, you want to give us a little bit more details about him involved with a couple other players were involved in this too, I believe. I know William Jeffers was there. He wasn't a part of the... John Hughley got arrested by the Pittsburgh police.
Sick.
From an incident earlier on.
It was in the summer, I believe.
Yeah, it was. He committed the act in the summer, but he got arrested. I believe it was around November, December.
Was that into the new year?
It
was crimes that were committed in July.
Yeah.
But
he wasn't arrested until like months later.
Yeah, it wasn't until November, December. But he was arrested with three felony charges.
Yeah, he stole a car and changed the license plate.
He thought he was real slick.
And it happened in Oakland. Yeah, as you said, William Jeffers was there, but obviously not charged.
There was another player there as well.
Oh boy, what's going on? What's going on down there, Pitt?
Noah Collier.
Noah Collier was another freshman. Two freshmen there. Because I believe they were at William Jeffers' apartment. I believe.
They were in South Oakland.
They were in one of the players' apartments. I don't exactly remember whose it was.
But that was almost a tone setter. Yet it didn't come out until a little bit into the season.
Right.
Because he played a handful of games and was pretty good because he's a four-star guy, 6'8", 6'9". He was going to be a difference maker for this Pitt program, at least down low.
And now?
Not like a superstar, but he was going to be good. And now they didn't have that. They had to stick with Terrell Brown.
It seems like it might just be me, but it seems like when seniors stay 4 years now, it seems like they've been here for like 18 years.
And we were saying how he hasn't changed, really one bit.
No, oh, he's changed. He's somehow managed to get worse throughout those 4 years. I don't know how that's possible. I don't know how you come to college, get stronger, do all these workout programs, and you manage to get worse in 4 years. That blows my mind.
Golbash, sometimes it happens,
but I find it hard to believe sometimes.
Golbash, you're wearing a pitch jacket right now. What do you think of the state of the program right now? With the X-Man design, the X-Man is out. Audis Tony is out. Justin Champagne has a good chance of going top 20 in the draft by a lot of people's analysis of him. You don't have John Hughley. You're not playing many young guys that you're now going to have to play.
Trey McGowan's left before this year.
Trey McGowan did, in fact, leave.
So Capel's main three that he recruited first year gone.
What is going on with Jeff Capel? Golbash, what is your assessment of Jeff Capel now?
I mean, I feel like most of it isn't on Capel. It's mostly because of the players' actions themselves, not of what Capel's coaching has shown. I mean, of course, his coaching has led them astray a little bit.
Okay, so you don't think that this might in any effect, I'm not saying it is. Do you think it in any way it might be part of the culture that is being created at Pitt? We see with the Steelers the culture of, we're going to let Juju dance all he wants until, oh, wait, it gets to be a little bit of a problem late in the season. Mike Tomlin has to say something, but then he's still dancing in games. It doesn't change. With AB and Bell, it was internal, and you know, nothing really got out, and Tomlin did a good job of keeping everything in until when they went to different teams and everything started to come out more. Do you think that this is more of the effect of the culture that Capel is not necessarily creating, but is not
is allowing,
but is allowing for this for now, you, all if, these for all this just noise to happen?
I mean, if you put it like that, it kind of makes it more believable. I mean, it makes you wonder what is really going on behind the scenes there at Pitt. I mean, from what I've heard, I mean, Capel seems like a good guy. If he's kind of got unlucky, you know, with everything that's gone down with the arrest of Hughley, with the rest of him, and then of course, then have losing probably your top four players that you have in your system for the within the span of 2 years. I mean, it's pretty unlucky, but I mean, it makes you wonder that like if it's his coaching or it's just what he's allowing to go on this team without us knowing.
I think it's another thing, like you said, Gulbash, behind the scenes, you have no idea what's going on there. He seems like he had it all under sort of control. Hughley is an
that's way out of his range.
That's way out of his range. I mean, it was really before he even stepped on the court for Pitt. I mean, had whatever their spring workouts and whatnot, but that was before he stepped on the court. Xavier Johnson, he said Jeff Capel answered a question after the NC State game about Xavier Johnson and just what has happened over the past year, and just saying that it's actually been across his whole time at Pitt where Xavier Johnson has sort of not bought in and not listened to Jeff Capel, and he's demonstrative, in quotes, demonstrative towards the refs is what Jeff Capel said, and he just can't get out of his own head.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many games you sat up close at Pitt basketball. I probably in the past 3 years since the virus and everything went down. I mean, I was up and close and with Pitt basketball with our good old pal of the show, Joey Shields, probably about 20 times watching Xavier Johnson. And the demeanor, you know, Trey McGowan's was worse demeanor towards the refs. But you just saw with Xavier Johnson. And, you know, I know his assist numbers are they're fine, you know, all right. He is pretty selfish with the ball. He takes awful shots. His jump shot, I know it's a little bit improved. It looks awful. It just looks terrible when he shoots it.
Remember when we first saw it? Whenever I think they played Florida State or one of those teams?
We saw it here at the event center when he was shooting. And we were like, oh man, he can't make everything.
He's barely making shots against the NEC team.
His form looked atrocious.
Yeah, it was not.
But that has nothing to do, you know, form
has nothing to do with.
Well, in terms of his attitude towards the refs as well, just everything was just kind of out of whack at sometimes. Now he was able to put up some wacky scoring performances at times too. That's just because of his natural talent and
natural athleticism.
His ball handling ability is pretty impressive, but his composure is not there. His constant confidence is not exactly always there. He loves to hoist up shots. He's not the best disciplinary player, and I guess stupid fouls at times. You know, as we're seeing off the court, maybe not the most disciplinary as well. But what I want to know, did Jeff Capel know what he was getting himself into?
No, with some of these guys.
No, there's no way. I mean,
you have to protect Justin Champagne. He's your best player. He's your best possibility of a draft guy. And whenever you have that possibility to be able to have someone go into the draft, you're going to have to do something to help them out, right?
So one of the other issues supposedly surrounding the whole ordeal with them transferring is supposedly something we can talk about on the air. Tony's mom, Audis Tony's mom, uh-huh, supposedly said something about Jeff Capel receives a bonus if he has any of his players mentioned for a player of the year candidate. And there's Champagne who's getting mentioned, and they were, I believe it's that.
Mentioned like what? Like top 25?
Yeah.
Naismith Awards, or something, you know?
Getting involved in those type of talks. And so a lot of thinking is that Capel was sort of pushing the message that get the ball to Champagne. And that's obviously not going to resonate well with Xavier Johnson, who's a ball hawk, and then Tony as well, who wants to get some action. Because for Tony himself also,
he was improving
a lot.
Yeah, he was awful in his freshman year.
He was good. He was good defensively last year, and then he proved his offense this year. And it's just a, it's just tough for Jeff Capel because he's a good guy. He's recruited well so far. He's built this program back, and now he's losing it in a matter of days.
Don't forget the decommitment of Hood Schifino as well.
Yeah,
he's not coming around.
Something. Yeah, that's something that has sort of gone under the carpet. I mean. That's something I completely forgot about until you brought that up. All those transpired in the past year and a half.
Yeah.
With McGowan's leaving and all with Hughley and now these two transfers. Just something – and Cable's done a tremendous job recruiting and bringing in guys and building this program back up. I mean, filling the events, the Pete, and now who knows what's going to happen. But Cable says in a press conference that he doesn't see any long-term effects from this. So – it's honestly, right now, it's a wait-and-see game. This year is sort of, you know, put it in your rearview mirror. It's over.
It's over in the past, and you have to go and work past that.
Can't see any wins coming in the ACC Conference Tournament. No way without Johnson and Tony, unless you see an incredible – I mean, another person you mentioned who was involved in the Hughley incident, William Jeffress, a four-star, came in. He hasn't really been much.
From Erie.
Now, he might step in a little bit with Tony, especially Tony gone – because Jeffress is a shooting guard, so he'll come in and play a lot more now, 6'7" shooting guard. And
Someone's going to have to play.
Exactly.
Someone's going to have to fill
in. I mean, Jeffress isn't bad, but he just hasn't seen the time, and he hasn't – but the time he's had, he hasn't made the most of it.
And we don't know what he's capable of doing yet. We haven't seen enough minutes to know what he really could do on a basketball court.
There's Nick Hedrick walking by the radio room from Erie.
From Erie.
Miami of the North and Vegas of the East.
Maybe he knows him. Maybe he knows Jeffress.
You think he knows Jeffress?
Yeah, there could be a chance.
Well, I hope that Pitt basketball fans will be able to get to know William Jeffress a little bit.
I hope we do, too.
One thing I want to transition to before we get into the, oh, gosh, Big Ben is back.
Oh, God.
Before we get into that, I was, you know, blogs to me are interesting because usually they don't have that many sources. They kind of see the information and they write a little bit of their opinion. A lot of these blogs are opinion pieces. So I'm just scrolling through Twitter today looking for topics to talk about. And I see on one of these Steelers sites that follows me, is, you know, they've been good to me. I've been good to them. The pretty good people that run the site. They're discussing. They wrote about just a little synopsis of ESPN, of what ESPN said. So ESPN is coming up with wild ideas for teams to trade a bunch of draft picks and go and fix your team very quickly and instantaneously. Yeah, because that can easily be done with the Steelers right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So ESPN says that the Steelers could, in fact, get Trey Lance, Najee Harris, and a top O lineman in the 2021 draft. And I said, you've got to be kidding yourself.
This I got to see.
So ESPN is saying that the Steelers should trade not the third 2021 first, but their 2022 first-round pick and also a 2022 third to be able to go up and get Trey Lance. So basically, it's a Devin Bush deal, except you're not going to have any picks in 22 in the first and third round. You're not going to have any picks then. Okay, so this would allow you to keep the 24th pick in the draft to be able to take Najee Harris, right?
Agreed.
Right? Or... you trade that 2022 first-round pick, go get Trey Lance in the top 10, keep your 24th overall pick and take Najee Harris, and then your second-round pick, you take a top-tier offensive lineman. Does anybody in their logical mind think that this is actually something that the Steelers would try to pull off?
No.
Nate, is this logical? No.
No.
Why?
I mean,
why do you guys think this is logical? I don't think it's logical because I know, okay, I think the whole thing with the Steelers trading draft picks to trade up for Devin Bush and, oh, we're going to give up a pick for Minka Fitzpatrick, a first-round pick we haven't given up since, like, the 60s, makes people brainwashed into the fact that this is going to be the ultimate culture-defining thing in the organization that's going to make everybody want to trade their draft picks as frequently as the Penguins. It makes no sense to me because The Steelers are built on young guys and consistent draft picks. And when Marquise Pouncey retires and Alejandro Villanueva is going to retire and your wide receiver claims he's coming back but is going to want $17 million and you got to sign your top three nickel corner in the game and you got to sign your fourth corner who's really good and you have holes at tight end, running back, and all over the place on the offensive line, you're trading draft capital that you need. I get it to be able to get that quarterback, but this does this just really make – I don't understand if this makes sense. I just don't think it does.
It doesn't. I mean, it puts so much value on how much a quarterback means to a team in the NFL because that just shows you how important it is. You're willing to throw aside any other important aspects, like you said, draft picks, you know, other key positions, linemen, just to make sure you have that QB that can help carry you to the rest of the franchise. But once you get that QB, how are you going to be able to support him and help him and give him that line or, like, that defense or even the help that he needs?
Yeah, and I agree, Austin, with what you were saying about just why go and trade these picks, and it's not a Steelers thing to do, but yeah. I think the landscape is changing a little bit in the NFL. And you could see it more often. I'm not saying the Steelers are going to do it, but it could be more of a potential. We obviously saw it with the Minka trade.
With more trades all
in
general.
And the move up with Bush in the draft, it could happen more often. I think especially in terms
of... And the fact that it's paid off both times that the Steelers have done it.
I think you're more or less going to see it in terms of the draft. They might want to move up a couple... Even if it's just a couple spots, they might move up.
Yeah,
just like they did with Bush. But I don't...
They could move up a couple spots. I could see them moving back. In all honesty, moving back if they want to pick Najee Harris. Really,
Do you think 24 is too high for Harris?
I do. I think 28 is a good spot. I would move back a little bit. Now, at the same time, if you want your guy and you think you can get your guy. But what if you move back to 28, 29 and pick up a third? I do that. Use that extra third on a center, on another nickel corner, on a wide receiver because you're good at developing those if you don't bring Juju back. There's so many different aspects that this team could go. And you're right, Nate. There has been a bunch of trades. The trades are becoming more frequent in the NFL. Matt Stafford was traded from Detroit to the Rams. The Rams sent in return two firsts and Jared Goff. Carson Wentz was traded. Russell Wilson trade rumors are being floated around. Deshaun Watson wants out. He told Cully, the coach, I ain't playing here. He's like, I am not coming back.
Why are you telling me your game plans for this season when I will not be here for this season?
Deshaun Watson is a 25-year-old mobile beast. He is elusive, athletic, energetic, culture-defining, and that team went 4-12. They need to get rid of him. That needs to be a mutually agreed upon parting of ways. Just because Deshaun Watson. He should control the cards. He deserves better than what they're dealing with in this cult-ish organization that's being described as. And Watson, and I think his best destination is San Francisco. But as you mentioned, Nate, the Steelers have to assess what is going to be best. I just feel like you don't – it's such a risky move. It's such a bold move to make. It really – because if it fails – and Trey Lance ain't good, or your running back that you take early in the first round
blows his knee out.
Yeah. This is going to set your organization back 3 to 4 years, and you could be in a situation like the Eagles or the Bears.
The Bears.
Where you have a great defense, but your offense is just atrocious, and you have no quarterback that you can rely on. Or you burn your bridge with your quarterback, or your running backs just are not good. But they're trying to get a deal done soon. They have a hard deadline with Ben to get it done by March 17th. March 17th, get that deal restructured.
Get that deal restructured. Go sign some players. Help them out.
Yeah, get that deal restructured.
Please save Ben.
Golvash, it is time for you to bring a topic to the table.
I sent something to my friends on Instagram. It was about Watson.
You send some stuff. We like to send things throughout the Instagram chat to be able to get our show prep done.
Do. And it was an unpopular opinion by an Instagram account, Spark NFL. I do not feel bad for Deshaun Watson in his current situation. He willingly signed an extension last September, knowing how messed up the organization was, and now he's acting like the victim.
Correct. Well, I wouldn't say he's acting like the victim, but
I just want to get thoughts on that because it was kind of an interesting take to mine because he did sign. I don't know, did he sign that extension before or after the Hopkins trade?
I believe he signed it in 2019.
I didn't know if he signed it before or after. If he signed it after the Hopkins trade, then I feel like it completely changes my view of the scenario. Like you knew what you were getting into before you signed that big extension. Was it all for the money or to just stay in the hometown? I mean, I don't know what it is. It was just
Watson signed the 4-year extension on September 5th of 2020. Being last year. And so then, clearly it was after the Hopkins deal.
It was, I mean, after losing your best receiver and you still want to stay, you still end up wanting to stay there, and now you just want to get out whenever. I mean, I don't get it. I don't quite understand. I mean, I was just wondering what you guys' thoughts were on that scenario.
I mean, yeah, he signed an extension. He got paid. He wanted his money. I just feel like, I don't know. It seems like now there's a lot of NFL players are trying to replicate the NBA with their power, their control, their brand, their ability to change teams. Because we know the brands of LeBron and Harden.
Durant.
And Durant, they're continuing to grow and just be massive. And the NFL guys, like Juju on Fortnite and Patrick Mahomes with State Farm every commercial that's on TV.
Head and shoulders.
And, well, yeah, I mean, players have been doing those promotions, but the brand and the culture is starting to become more NBA in terms of player mobility. Terms of the quarterbacks. We've always seen players move and change teams from other positions. But quarterbacks are such a basis position to where you do not, if you have a good quarterback, you do not give him up. So I really think that the times are changing in that regard, where the quarterbacks realize that they're the most powerful players in the organization and on the team. So they want to be able to utilize that control. And for Deshaun Watson, who just has nothing around him, I don't blame him for taking the money, taking the stability. He's had two ACLs. Two ACL injuries.
People forget that, too.
He's had two ACL injuries. He has to take the guaranteed money. I mean, he would be stupid not to take the money. You know, because let's say he blew out his knee again this year, he's done.
He's done.
Three ACLs, he's over. His career's over.
I mean, like, I remember we were watching Cowherd, and he laid out an injury report from Deshaun Watson and Andrew Luck and how eerily similar it was.
Yeah, he has no offensive line. They've tried to boost up that offensive line. They traded a first-round pick for Tunsil. That has kind of not really worked out very well. He's good.
He's paid off. I mean, what? That pick became what? Top five?
They're going to have the third. Miami's going to get the third pick this year. They almost made the playoffs. They're going to have Houston's
third overall pick.
Imagine if Houston had that pick. They could trade Deshaun Watson, get like three or four first-round picks, use their third overall pick to take Zach Wilson, and then you have Zach Wilson, whoever's first-round pick you trade Watson for, and then you have two more picks in the future, maybe even three.
And who knows how many you get in that draft.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. No.
Not bad at all.
Not bad at all.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. Nate, do you have any light to shed
any
on this?
Input on Deshaun Watson? What do you think of Deshaun Watson wanting out? And, you know,
I understand why he wants out. I mean, this organization.
Well, yeah, obviously, there's no doubt about
There's no doubt about it. But, like, just saying that, like, you know, he kind of knew what he was getting into whenever he signed this season, and why couldn't he
did,
just,
but that in the injuries that he's had, that's why he had to sign it.
Yeah, he had to sign it. It kind of makes you think if it was his plan to play this season, and then no matter what, he was going to try and force his way out.
Yeah, I didn't really chime in too much because I was going to harp on basically the same thing that you guys did in terms of why sign the contract and knowing that this is a bad organization, potentially not wanting to be there, and then Austin also talking about growing the brand of players and wanting those big-time contracts. They want those big-time contracts, and then they sort of want that team to be focused around them. Obviously, Watson being a quarterback, he's going to get that big-time money. And maybe the only other thing I would add is maybe at the time when he signed it, he said, hey, there's still a chance we could turn this team around, this organization. Maybe we're not headed in the direction that I think we're going in. And then he plays this season and realizes, well, I might have screwed myself over, and now I'm stuck in a terrible situation.
I mean,
with a terrible
organization. On paper, the offense did not look as bad as I thought it was going to be. You had David Johnson, who could at least be maybe a 900 to a 1,000 yard rusher. Quick, speedy receivers, good deep ball threats for him. Will Fuller, Brandon Cooks. I mean, but they just didn't do. I mean, they just got nothing. I mean, they couldn't get open, and then the defense was atrocious, and that just didn't. They never did anything to address the defense. They never were able to address that defense for however long Deshaun Watson or any time they were competitive. They had no ways of addressing certain – they just couldn't do it. They just didn't know how to.
Correct. It's a mess.
It is. It's a complete mess of an organization.
Also a mess was Army basketball, men's and women's, last night in the Horizon League tournament. Their first ever appearances in the Horizon League tournament. Gilvash, how about that?
The tournament.
Yes, the tournament.
It was very – It was very sad to watch.
Yeah. Antoine Davis of Detroit Mercy, because RMU men's basketball played Detroit Mercy for the third time in a row, because that's just how brackets work out. He dropped 46.
I was watching it back in the dorm, and I was like, who is this dude?
46.
He was just pulling up, and everything was going in.
That broke an all-time Horizon League tournament record. 10 three-pointers was also an all-time Horizon League tournament record. He was 10 for 16 from deep, 16 of 26 shooting, and he made it on SportsCenter.
RMU made it to SportsCenter.
No, against RMU on SportsCenter.
I know, but we still kind of made it, even though...
Yes, even though they lost.
Got destroyed.
Women's basketball also lost. Coach Charlie Viscaglia was not there to coach the team as well. Was dealing with...
Did you ever get your insight on that?
Yeah, I did get my insight on...
Is that something you would like to shed light on or no?
Is that something you can shed light on?
Probably, but...
You're going to keep it under wraps for now?
I'll keep it under wraps for now.
All right, fair enough.
Secrecy.
It was odd, though, to see that he wasn't there leading his team.
Scott Schneider coached in place of him. I don't know. Women's basketball is no height. They have no size. They get dominated down low, especially by Mary Dunn, the hardworking player for Youngstown State, who led Youngstown State to another victory in the conference tournament. I don't. Let's start with men's. Let's start with men's before we get into women's. I don't understand for men's what is going on with just the team chemistry. And people transferring every year. It's every year. We saw last year DJ Russell transferred. Jalen Hawkins transfer. This year AJ Brahma transfers. It would not shock me if another player on this team transfers. Bless you, Golvash.
Thank you.
Why is this, Golvash? What do you think? I think partly it might be because of Andy Tool's system and culture, but I don't understand. It's a constant trend and theme. So Jeff Capel, you just got Andy Tooled.
Throw that man in the tool shed.
Yes, throw that man in the tool shed. What do you think?
But, I mean, I can definitely agree with you on that it definitely has something to do. It could have something to do with coaching, or maybe it can just be with the culture here. I mean, there could be so many factors that end up being put into it. I mean, AJ Brahma, I can understand. I mean, you're performing so well. You know, you're a good player. You can definitely go. You can afford to play somewhere else. But, like, with the certain other players, it kind of makes you go, like, why would you leave when they're performing well here? Well, I feel like Jalen – do you think – is Jalen Hawkins starting where he's playing now?
I mean, I would assume it's Norfolk State.
I believe at Norfolk State he is starting, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're all going to perform better roles.
AJ Brahma got an offer from Gonzaga. Or he did not get an offer. They've reached out to him. Could you imagine?
I mean, all this stuff's going. I mean, all of them are going to better places, but it could just be an appeal place. I mean, someone offers you a place to be a starter where you're sitting as like a six man like Jalen Hawkins is. You're offered to be a starter. You're not going to take that. I mean,
when you're eventually going to get into this? Well, Yanis Mendy's gone. Savion McEwen's gone. Why not step into that role? Josh Williams is gone. Why not step into that role with RMU and try to be a starter?
I guess people just don't want to deal with the weight. They don't want to wait that extra
year
or two.
No, there's more to that.
I feel like there's definitely a whole lot more to it than any of us can possibly understand. But I mean, you have to think that like if you know you're gonna have the starting job in a year or two, then why won't you just wait?
Yeah. So I decided to go a little bit and do some research on Jalen Hawkins and what he's doing at Norfolk State.
Yeah.
Averaging 17 minutes per game, he's averaging 9.5 points.
Yeah.
Per game and shooting 42% from three-point range.
Better than he was playing here.
Jalen Hawkins also is 6'2", which he has some nice size for a guard, whereas Dante Tracy's what, like
5?
Dante Tracy's as tall as me.
Dante Tracy's,
I mean, like,
John Williams 6'1", Dante Tracy's 6'. Some other guards are just small. Trayden Williams 5'11". Jalen Hawkins, if he was there, he would have started. With his size would have been a nice attribute to that.
And the thing is, that's not even like super tall in terms of like point guard standards.
Because
now.
Coming into Horizon League also, the big thing was the guard matchups. Some of these Horizon League guards are just so much taller than what RMU has to offer.
The whole league is taller than them.
Yeah. I think that's the one adjustment that Tool has to make in terms of recruiting too, going to get bigger guys.
Yeah, bigger guys are crucial. I mean, they don't even have to be really good. They just have to be, you know, relatively big, can move, and can be solid defensively, and just let the shooters, because they're still, I didn't feel like they played awful against Detroit Mercy. They in reality, they just got beat by one player.
Yeah, and we talked about, Austin, you mentioned about other players leaving the program potentially too. There's been one name speculating on our mind potentially about leaving, and that's been Dante Tracy.
Dante Tracy, maybe he's going back to his hometown area in Florida.
He's had an off year. He only had 2 points in 30 minutes played against Detroit Mercy in this tournament game.
He cannot put the ball in the bucket at all. After winning the NEC Player of the Game for the NCAA Finals,
for filling in the bucket.
He was the conference championship MVP, and he's done nothing. He's distributed okay. His assist numbers are there at times. He just looks like a completely different player.
Do you think he's just outclassed in this league?
A little bit. I don't feel like he's comfortable in his role anymore. He gives the ball up to Traydon Williams occasionally as well. Like, I don't think his confidence is there whatsoever.
And the other thing is they have new guards. They have these freshman guards, Cam Ferris, Traydon Williams, Enoch Cheeks, who have all been able to sort of fill in. Even when Dante Tracy has disappeared, there's guys that are coming in. I think that's also hurt the confidence of Tracy in another reason why he might leave the program. I think it's almost I'm really going to put it out there. I'm just going to say it's inevitable at this point. I really think he could leave the program. That's just what I see.
I mean, I think he can leave after an off year like this, and you know you're probably on the outs in terms of having the younger guys coming to take your spot. I mean, it kind of just makes sense to go and play somewhere else to try and start.
And Dante Tracy, I mean, he's been a great 3-point shooter, but he just can't also – he can't attack the rim. Like, he can't get inside anymore either.
I mean, we were able to – I mean, we would – I mean, I would see him dunking the layup lines, and I was like, oh, this dude's a pretty solid athlete. And then, like, he just ends up getting
– he just can't get inside.
He just can't get inside.
He gets shut down. He's not physical enough and obviously not – his physical stature isn't there to get him inside either.
No, he's not – he can't – he's able to get in, but he's not able to finish well.
No, and we've seen him – get really frustrated at times, punching bleachers and just yelling at himself on the court at home games, just not being able to hit anything in terms of his floater, which was
money.
His game last year. It was his key to – and, you know, I think part of that is the bigger bodies in the Horizon League. It's, like Khalil Spear told us, it's a more physical league. It's, you know, it's –
and that could
it's
take
a league built on size and physicality down low, but guards do play a major role as well. And Dante Tracy just can't shoot anymore. We've seen him hit threes off the side of the backboard and over the rim, airballing it. We've seen some just rim out. He's been everywhere in terms of his shot this year,
Except in the basket. Inconsistent shooter, and that's not going to help you win games or make it very far and make it very far in these types of tournaments.
No.
Now, the other thing is, so their season's wrapped up. Now, looking ahead to next season, I wanted to talk about it a little bit. Two seniors moving on with Williams and Charles Bain, but they have those two transfers that around the RMU Century Media area we've harped on. Brandon Stone and Justin Winston.
Yeah.
Justin Winston, 6'8", from St. Bonaventure's transfer, and then
Brandon Stone,
6'11", from LaSalle. And both of them, 8'10", guys. So those are some nice pickups for Tool. Definitely helping with the size category once those guys come in.
I mean, it can do more. It could be – would anyone dare say game-changing? Having someone 6'11", coming to defend the paint?
Because – the big thing, last year they did a good job of sort of mixing the bag with your going outside and being able to shoot the three ball, as well as working it down low with someone like Yanis Mendy and Brahma and Charles Bain, where Charles Bain played a lot better last year. And it wasn't until Brahma left this year where Bain finally picked up the slack.
Yeah, he really did.
High in the teens.
Yeah, Charles Bain looked like a completely different player without Brahma. It was night and day with Charles Bain. It made no sense to me. Why... I guess they just must not have been able to flow with each other.
Yeah, it's kind of
Charles Bain looked like a perennial threat offensively, where he was missing bunny layups when Brahma was in.
Yeah, there were some ugly shots.
It was ugly. It was bad. He was terrible. I called for him to be benched on CSC.
Yeah,
and then he was their best player.
He said, "You know what? This Austin guy's telling me I should be benched. I'm going to go out there and play."
Hey, good for him. Good for him. He played great.
It's a good thing to silence critics.
He played a lot better.
It's a good.
But this, I think this program, I think each and every year with lower end college basketball teams really is you take it year by year. You don't look at it too much at the long-term outlook, I don't think, too much, because
there really
it always it always changes.
There really isn't one.
It fluctuates with the graduating class.
I mean, as we saw with Pitt earlier, how quick a franchise or like a college can turn around, college system can turn around with just the – just a snap of the fingers.
The transfer portal is going to be a mess this year, too, with everybody going to be instantly eligible to be able to play next year.
And I just think next year, though, also finally adjusting, and I think Toole can switch his team around and fix it and be ready for another season, at least compete. I'm not saying they're going to be top tier of the Horizon League, but they'll be better. I'm liking the way the roster could potentially shape up. I haven't looked at too many of the freshmen that are coming in. But, I mean, just talk about, like, Khalil Spear alongside with Stone and Winston – being there in the front court, that's a nice trio right there. Now, I obviously haven't watched too much into on Stone and Winston's play, but obviously coming from bigger schools and bigger conferences, that could help this team out a lot.
I agree. It really shows that with a nicer big man, it just really makes you wonder what this team can do when they have, you know, when they have that mix of size and skill that they've been wanting to have for such a long time.
Right. In women's basketball, they just – not having their coach and not having any size whatsoever, with three players transferring in the past year, with Neka Zebo, or two players transferring and then one graduating, Zebo transfer. Now I can't even speak. Neka Zebo graduated, Irei Ozimamadu transferred, and Isabel Posse transferred during the middle of this season.
There we go.
There we go. Yes, talking is hard.
Words are hard.
They need size, and right now they have no size. That
just seems to be a problem for Army basketball in general, size.
Their best player was a freshman, and their guards could not consistently score.
It was just an adjustment.
No recipe
also
for success.
I think it was that adjustment.
It's an adjustment.
They weren't ready.
But even last year in the NEC, I mean, they still were a relatively smaller team.
Because that's how they were able to control the NEC. Because also, same thing with men's basketball. With Neka Zebo and Irei Ozimamadu, and then alongside with Posset and Megan Callahan and Hanukkah Ikemasu, who disappeared this year, they were able to mix beyond the arc and down low. They were able to really – I mean, early this season, this team could not hit a three. They could not. I mean, Megan Callahan was missing basically every shot she was taking. Nina Augustin could never get up a shot.
Well, my Forgues was not in the lineup.
Finally, as the season went along, they started to figure it out, but especially with mixing in with Sol Castro. But Sol Castro, she's a nice player. She's good down low, but she's just not –
she got exposed defensively down low.
She's not as dominant as, obviously, we've seen with Neka Azebo and her dominance over the course of her career at RMU.
Yeah, and I don't think that Azebo would have been able to dominate as much as she did in the NEC either in Horizon League competition. She was really good, but to be able to dominate the NEC, I think, would have been an adjustment.
It would have definitely helped.
Well. It would have helped, yeah.
Either one of those two. I know Irei Ozimamadu wasn't putting up numbers nearly as close as Neka Zebo was, because Neka Zebo was just a league above the rest in terms of Army players.
Right.
I think it would have definitely helped in terms of getting them up there in the middle of the pack instead of sitting so low where they were, and then getting beat first round of the tournament. So I just think they weren't, like we said, like we keep talking about, is the size was definitely a big factor for both of these teams.
Because I mean, in college basketball, size really is a factor. I mean, you have someone like, I mean, you look at that UCF team a years back that had Taco Fall. They made it so far strictly on the fact of his defense, mm-hmm. in a way. And yes, they had people that could score. They had a whole bunch of people, but he was the main focal point of that team. I mean, not having a team forcing some teams to shoot, it could be killer for them. And like that's what that size that presence brings.
Agreed. With no mystery caller this year so far, other than Tyler Gerchak.
Other than Mr. Gerchak.
Because people are busy. People are going through busy times with their school. The Penguins, though, Nate, talk about the Penguins a little bit. What you think's going on with the Pens overall, and just, you know, they're with Burke and Ronnie Hextall, they're starting to play so much better. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if it's that initial, oh boy, we're getting evaluated, we're getting judged right now, even harder than we were in the old regime. We get to play tougher. I don't know if that's motivation in that regard or if the team is just clicking at the right time. What do you think?
Well, this team had a whole lot of injuries at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, they're starting to get healthier.
Yeah, they're starting to get healthier, and everyone's starting to play together. They're starting to get more minutes together. They're starting to gel. And even then, I mean, certain players are just are starting to step up a little more. I think Letang's looked a whole lot better as of late. He's playing a whole lot better. Matheson, who didn't really get a chance, he showed some promise.
Cody's had some couple nice plays.
He's made a couple nice plays. Kapanen's looked as advertised. Nate was telling me yesterday they sat him because he wasn't
on Saturday.
They sat him because he wasn't playing up to standard. He comes out, plays a great game against the Capitals.
Scores the overtime winner.
Did not play. Didn't do a whole lot against the next game though. I mean, they got blown out by the Caps, but with some controversy, Tom Wilson throwing a little cheap hit against Mark Jankowski.
Tom Wilson and controversy. It's like toast at breakfast.
Exactly.
You must have it.
But the Pens are 5-2 in their past seven.
They played a lot better. Are they still tied?
And it's coming from the back end, I think, to the front. Jarry is playing a lot better than what he was since DeSmith was put in way back against the Islanders when the Pens won in the shootout. When they lost to the Islanders 4-3. Jarry has played every game since then, and he has basically stood on his head and played tremendous.
I was thinking, I think DeSmith playing well was the kind of kick in the butt that Jarry needed, was to say, like, look, this dude can take my spot. I am not clearly the number one guy, or people don't think I'm that number one guy. Let me go out there and show you why everybody thought I was number one, and why the fans and you guys should have faith in me as in a team.
And that's why the goaltending situation in Pittsburgh has been so competitive over the years, because they have guys who can go in and fill in and start.
It's almost seamless how the transition ends up going with
Casey DeSmith, who no one would say, hey, he could potentially be our number one starter, until he started showing.
He's one hell of a backup, though.
He's a nice backup to have, and he's pushing Jarry to start playing a lot better, and we've seen it, and it's transpired over the past couple games. We've seen that happen
with the past couple goals. I mean, you've had Jarry pushing Murray pushing Fleury.
Yeah,
and
especially Fleury, because Fleury has over his career, since he locked
always
in
been that guy.
Since he locked in himself as a number one, he's been lackadaisical at some times. And I think pushing with Murray, like, he's had Brent Johnson backing him up. I mean,
Thomas Vokoun pushed him a little bit,
but guys like Brent Johnson and Thomas Greiss, they're not gonna push him that much. I mean, they weren't gonna turn in. I know Greiss turned into a number one guy, but it wasn't until Murray where we really saw that Fleury had to step up his game and play.
I mean, in reality, he did a little bit, but, like, eventually, as we saw, Murray ended up taking his spot. And then, you know, whenever the questions came in, oh, is Murray that guy still? Is he that number one dude? Jarry comes in, and he begins to push him. And, like, it's just seamless. That's one thing the Penguins have been really underrated for, is the amount of good goalies that they have produced. I mean, you look at how good Thomas Greiss has been. I mean, Thomas Greiss has been always up there. I mean, you know, even though if he's a backup / starter, he always ends up putting up one of the best save percentage numbers whenever he comes out to start. And then, you know, just a whole bunch of goalies, you end up going down the line, you're like, wow, these dudes used to be Penguins? And then, like, I just feel a goalie is a very underrated position for the Pittsburgh Penguins, and how crucial it's been to the teams.
Yeah, it's led to a lot of success, especially Fleury, Murray, and just the tandem of goalies that the Penguins have been able to possess over the past 5 years has been sort of shocking in terms of how probably the league looks at the Pens and says, why can't we be them? Not just with the Penguins with Crosby and Malkin, but it's in the back end, too.
In the back end, too. I mean, yeah, the defense. You know, everyone wishes they have, like, a Letang or, like, a Daly, or, like, even, like, getting, like, a Trevor Daly or, like, Paul Martin, or, like,
Ian
any
Cole,
of those.
Just
Ian, those
transforming just, some
just,
of those guys.
Yeah, just, like, everyone wishes to have, like, one of these guys, and they just so happen to be on this team. And they're playing well, and hopefully they can pick it up and prove me wrong. Hopefully they can make the playoffs.
Playoffs.
We talking about playoffs?
We're talking about the playoffs at the end of February?
Yeah, for hockey, it's kind of true.
For hockey, that's almost true.
All right, let's do some predictions. Does Justin Champagne stay or go to the draft after this little incident with some of his former teammates?
I think after this incident, I think he's gone.
I agree. I think he's going to capitalize on his opportunities and not wait, because you know how it is. People don't want to play another year.
People don't want
to
risk it.
They don't want to play in those bowl games in college football because they don't want to get injured. They just want to go right to the draft and be prepared and play, and that's exactly what Champagne. And I think this is right now where he's at. It might be the highest he gets in terms of draft capital.
Ben back, according to Art Rooney. They want him back. Ben wants to come back. People do not, and the people in the media do not want him back, including I might be starting to get to that point as well. If Ben does come back and they have to keep his number, even if they drop it a little bit, who can this team not re-sign? Who comes back? Who does not?
Oh, that's tough. I think you have to re-sign. I think Hilton and I feel like Hilton and Bud, I think, have to be re-signs. I think you can afford to let go of Juju if Juju's there. You can end up picking him back up, but I mean, you just need to keep this defense intact for as long as you possibly can. I feel like, as you said, Hilton's one of the more underrated corners in the league. He's very good at what he does. Best blitzing, one of the best blitzing corners in the league. And then Bud, there's no explanation needed there. I mean, he's T.J. Watt's sidekick. He's like his Batman. He's his Robin to T.J. Watt's Batman. Watt plays so much better with him, and I feel like he just needs to be part of this team.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think you keep that defense intact as much as you can. Hilton, Bud Dupree, Juju can go, James Conner can go. You can you can fill those positions. I don't even think they need to really – I don't think they need to go after a wide receiver. You have James Washington, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson. Those three right there in itself – I think carry a receiving core. Yeah. Yes, maybe a nice piece would be added in there. Maybe a veteran just to go out there and sign someone for cheap, like maybe a DeSean Jackson or an Alshon Jeffrey who just got released by the Eagles. So someone like that, but they're not going to really be any factor to the team, but I think you got to keep that defense intact.
A veteran better than Ryan Switzer. Maybe Matt Canada can actually use Ray McLeod to do some running around stuff like they do in college.
Go run. Do something.
Run around stuff. Like run around guy.
Run around, do something, guy.
Run around, guy. Maybe Ray McLeod has a lot of skill in terms of his speed and a little bit route running.
I can
well.
Definitely see him used as like a gadget player, or like
the, yeah. That
would
he's
be...
got speed. Let Ray McLeod exploit some of that speed and be able to use it.
Exactly.
I think you have to like Juju go goodbye. Go dance somewhere. Go dance in Miami or in Buffalo or well, not Buffalo, but like the Jets. Go dance with the Jets. That's my hot take for the Jets. Okay, James Conner, goodbye. I'm one to say that Bud Dupree does not have to come back. I'm a Alex Highsmith believer. Not many people are. Mm-hmm. I like Alex Highsmith. I like what we saw. Pro Football Focus really likes him. They graded him pretty highly. I don't look into those numbers too much, but I think that Alex Highsmith is a guy that with some more reps, and you know you might have to have Stephon Tuitt play exceptionally well again to be able to have some of that attention drawn to them. So Alex Highsmith has some free rushes, but in some of the limited experience that I saw, Bud Dupree was bad his first 3 years. Bud Dupree was a bust his first 3 years with the Steelers.
Exactly, he was awful.
So give Alex Highsmith some time. I think he has some potential to be able to get there. With Ben coming back, do the Steelers have any chance of making the playoffs?
The AFC the North's going to be tough. I mean, they have a shot at it, but everything has to go right.
Yeah, I think they make the playoffs because, again, it's not necessarily Ben. It's the defense that has been carrying this team the past 2 years. I mean, we saw it with Duck in there. I mean, they were able to nearly be a playoff team. And this year, they were far above the rest in terms of their win streak because their defense was there and helping out Ben. And then Ben six times this year threw three or more picks. So that defense had to be there to help him.
I mean, do you think they make it, Austin?
Ben will come back as the fourth best quarterback in the division.
Wow. It,
possibly.
Wow. And that's not even a hot take. It's just true. I mean, Burrow played really well.
Burrow's better than him right now. I don't like, you know my thoughts on Baltimore's guy. I don't think he's good passing wise, but he runs around very exceptionally.
Mr. Run around guy.
Lamar Jackson he can escape and play really well. Now I still don't think I can say that.
Are you going to say Baker?
Ben is not better than Baker. But right now, I would probably.
Baker played really well last year.
If I had a choice of the two, I'd probably take Baker. Now, I know I'd probably get slandered to hell and back for that one. But I just think Baker is just playing better in terms of game managing. And Ben still
thinks he's that guy.
Baker's not turning the ball over anymore this year, at least late in the year. Ben was a turnover machine late in the year. In the playoffs, he's been awful. The Jacksonville game, 3-4 interceptions, another 3 interceptions against Cleveland. Turnover galore for Roethlisberger.
I mean, it's just ugly.
Let's get into some shout-outs, Golvash. I'm going to Golvash. Actually, do you have anything Do you have any predictions that you'd like to bring to the
predictions.
Table? I do not have bowling tonight.
That was actually going to be the first one I said.
That is next.
That was actually going to be the first thing I said. Predictions. I don't think I got any as of right now.
No, Golvash, no predictions. Nate, predictions?
Here's a prediction.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of RMU men's basketball.
Besides Dante Tracy. Yeah.
Who else do you see that could potentially leave the program?
That's it.
You think?
I think everybody else sticks around. I think Trade and Williams and
the one other
Trade and Williams would be the only one I would think of.
One other guy I would think of is Cam Wilbon. Yeah. Potentially. I mean, he's been sort of a quiet role player, but he might want to move on to a different team because he's going to be a guy that potentially does not get utilized as much.
No, I don't know. We saw Enoch Cheeks kind of fall out of favor a little bit too in the rotation. So, I don't know. I think that Tool is going to create some stability on this team. I don't think he has any other choice to be able to find
any other choice in the matter.
No, he doesn't. To be able to find any other guys to be able to stick around with the program. And I think with Winston and Stone, it creates some potential. But yeah, I think the guards probably stick around. I think, you know, maybe so Charles Bain and John Williams, I think one of the two come back. That's my hot take. You get a COVID year, I think one of those two guys come back. Bain, maybe after playing really well the last couple of weeks, or John Williams, who is a senior motivator, great leader. Maybe we get John Williams to come back and lead the offense in a regular year. So that's my thought process on that.
I like that.
Golvash, do you have your shout-outs?
All right, I would like to shout out my mother, my father, who is going into surgery Monday. He's having hip surgery.
Oh, best of luck. Best of luck on the hip surgery.
Best of luck, father. I wish you nothing but the best. I'd like to shout out Alex, who went and got a shutout in his last game he played.
Nice. I'd like to shout out Alex Terry for being the average leader for ball movable.
Also shout out Alex Terry for being the batting average leader.
Yes, very good.
But your brother had a big game.
What a big game. That was awesome.
Played North Hill. Shut him out.
Great.
And I love you guys, and I'll be seeing you very shortly.
I'm going to stick with the sentiment of wishing Mr. Golvash the best of luck in his surgery. So shout out to him. He's been a great guy. A great figure in my life, being so close to Andrew throughout the years. And then shout out to my parents as well for, you know, giving me a lot of tips and along the way in terms of just my work that I'm putting out around the AMC and the Century Media portion of my life. And then shout out to Corn, as always, for helping out and being along my side along the way.
Shout out to Mr. Golvash. Best of luck in surgery. Shout out to just, you know, the people.
The people.
You know? Shout out to Joey Shields for when I texted him, because he goes to Pitt, if he knew anything about the story. He said the first thing I heard about it was when Tommy Allen sent that info into our group chat. So Joey, I know you're not listening, Joey, but I hope we clip this and send it to you. You do not know, Joey. Oh, no, Joey. We go to all those games and you didn't know. But that's okay, Joey. We love you. Thank you for becoming a captain in Baltimore football. We're really looking forward to that. Shout out to my family as always. Shout out to the people that make my life go round and drive me crazy almost every day as well. It's awesome.
And to fellow Wiffle members.
Please play. We have about seven open spots we need to fill.
Please play. And the doc is underway.
The doc is underway. Yes, the documentary is underway, which is very exciting for me. Really, really happy to be able to have that going out and getting ready to go there. Shout out to all the people that may be listening that we don't know that they are listening. You know who you are. We maybe do not know who you are, but we might know you are. Maybe we don't. We like to take educated guesses.
Who do you think's listening?
You know, Golvash, I don't know. Who do you have as a potential listener?
A potential listener that we might not have named. I think we could have Josh Selzer as a listener right now.
I don't think he's listening.
Nate, do you have any special listeners?
No. I have no idea who would be listening.
That's why you never know. You got to go out and ask.
Andrew Golvash, you are our music manager.
I do have one.
You are our music manager.
I was thinking about it. I got one. Do I have the okay? Am I good to go?
You do not.
I do not have the good to go?
Actually, yeah, you do.
I do.
Andrew? Go right ahead. Go ahead. Take us home.
I'm playing the song.
Take us home. See, this is the problem with me and this board. Look at that bass.
Daft Punk, 28 years. One of the best songs.
This is Baldwin of the Berg. Thank you for listening. Very, very appreciative. Thank you. Appreciative.
Thank you.
On a Friday of the end of February, Austin Bechtel joining you alongside my co-host. I'm waiting for them to say their names.
Andrew Golvash.
Nathan Bryce here.
Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the month of March where the madness will ensue.
Yes.